I'm John Aran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Little tapper. Harris will spin and throw, and that'll do it. The Astros couldn't score in the 10th and the 11th, and then they only score one in the 12th after the A's scored two in the top half. Frustrating loss tonight to start this series against the Oakland A's.
Good word, Todd Callis. It was frustrating. Todd Callis on the call there. The Astros lose last night 4-3. Mariners lose again, so the Astros are still up 4.5. Sand is just running out of the hourglass right now in the Seattle Mariners, as long as they're going to lose every night that the... It seems like the same things happen. Like, when the Astros win, the Mariners win, the Astros lose, the Mariners lose, and this 4.5-game lead feels... It's a 5-game lead in the loss column. Feels pretty comfortable right now. Like, I'm not worked up about last night. In fact, as long as the Mariners are going to play, you know, kind of mediocre baseball, I can take losses last night and go, you know what? I feel good that Spencer Arrighetti looks like he straightened some things out. You know?
I feel good about Spencer Arrighetti having straightened some things out. We talked about this earlier. At this point right now, I trust Spencer Arrighetti over three appearances more so than Justin Verlander, just because I think Arrighetti's going to give you two good appearances, mm-hmm. and then maybe one where Blanco has to come in as your long relief. Whereas with Verlander, I don't know if he's going to give you a single good appearance over the course of three games. So once Verlander irons things out, then I will go full bore into trusting him again, but at his age and with the injuries he's sustained this year, I don't think it's a slam dunk that, oh yeah, he'll be just fine come playoff time. So that's the uncomfortable position we find ourselves in, where, Sean, really the rest of the AL is kind of just sputtering down the... I don't want to say sputtering. Everybody's playing 500 baseball. The Mariners, they're 4-6 in their last 10. The Yankees, the Orioles, all these teams, the Guardians, these teams are all just playing 500 baseball. The part that I get frustrated with is that in a night where you're 2-for-17 with runners in scoring position, where you get beat by three consecutive bunts by the A's, that, man, this was an opportunity where you could have been making a stab for that number two seed.
That's fair.
If you could go on a run right now, or if you had in these past 10 games, you could really be making a push, and they're just running with the pack right now.
Yep.
Everybody's mediocre over the course of the last 10 or 15 games.
Yeah, a wild card round series is something we're not used to here. You know, whether it was before the 6-game format and having to play a 1-game wild card, or now with the 16 format in the postseason. But now with the 6-team format, the two seasons that we've had that non-COVID, the Astros have been able to get that bye in the first round. And that's you know, There's a lot of reasons that you make seven straight ALCSs. Having to play less baseball to get to the ALCS is a big reason for that, you know?
And it's just, I mean, and we've just seen this so many times. The problem with the three-game series, I don't care if you got home field advantage. I don't care about any. It's just so random. It puts so much randomness into it. And it's so easy for a bad team, not even a bad team, but a lesser team to beat even a vastly superior team in a three-game series. Yeah. So, and this is the last year since 2017. This might be the last year where I want any kind of randomness in the playoffs, because there's a lot of randomness to the Astros right now.
I guess it's easy. Even with Arrighetti pitching pretty decently last night, like right now, it's a pretty easy power ranking here to stack up for a wild card series, where it's you go Hunter, you go Fromber, in some order. I don't know which permutation it is, if it's Framber first or Hunter. Right now, the rotation lines up with Hunter and then Framber. So that might be what it ends up being just because you're playing down the stretch that way. Hunter goes tonight, Framber goes tomorrow. I guess, I mean, is Kikuchi is the easy pick for the third guy right now?
I would think so, yeah. That's who I'd be.
I mean, Eric Eddie's only had the one bad outing, but God, it was atrocious. It's one that loses you a game.
I mean, well, it's not just one bad outing. I think it's, you know, you go a few games before that, he had a bad outing, too. It's not, I don't know. He just doesn't have the same consistency over the duration of his career.
Yeah.
Kikuchi's only pitched 1 2/3 innings in the playoffs, but I don't worry about that as much. If you're looking at two guys that have minimal playoff experience, I'd rather go with a guy that's just been playing Major League Baseball for a lot longer.
You know what you probably do, like now more than ever, is you go Kikuchi 3 innings, maybe Spencer Arrighetti 3. It is an all hands on deck game because if you had to go to a game 3. It's an all hands on deck game where the first sign of trouble, you're going to the next guy. And because you got a good bullpen, you know?
Well, especially with Kikuchi, the one thing is you can't expect him to go deep into that game.
Correct.
Nor do you want to. It's two times through the rotation.
Yeah. That's what you do.
Classic, just as simple as that.
4 innings out of, whatever it is, however many innings it takes you to get through the lineup twice.
Yeah. Just to remember, you go back to August 16th. That was when Arrighetti had let up 4 runs. And then you had a couple good games before that, but like late July, that was a bad stretch. So, I mean, he's had some nice stretches where he goes a few games in a row, but then the really ugly one pops up. So I don't trust him in totality.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Kyle Tucker, since his return, he's been back for 3 games now. Well, he's been back for more games than that, but he's played in 3 games. 1 for 10 with 2 walks, 4 strikeouts. So he's got 4 strikeouts in 12 plate appearances. 1 hit. It was a base hit. So nothing yet. I think we're just chalking this up to rust, right? These would be rehab games normally that Kyle Tucker. Like, that's the thing. Like, Kyle Tucker, rusty Kyle Tucker is better than anything they've had in the outfield over the last couple of months.
Rusty,
you know?
Kyle Tucker versus a rusty trombone. Yeah, I'll take the rusty Kyle Tucker, please.
Oh boy.
I'll order that up.
Yeah.
Probably should dump that.
Yeah, there you go. don't need the kids fumbling for Urban Dictionary. Yeah.
I don't even know. Yeah, I don't need the FCC to make a precedent-setting ruling on that one.
Yeah. Okay. There's like 10 jokes I want to tell right now.
Congratulations to the people on the stream that got to hear that.
Yeah. Okay. Nobody named. Never mind. I'm not gonna.
Named Rusty.
Yeah.
I made
a
joke about rustiness.
Right. There was another name, but it's okay. God, it's like having an electro shock collar on right now. So back at it tonight. Hunter Brown, Framber Valdez. Like that. These are the two hammers, man. Like, this is where you go. All right, we lose the first one, but we got Hunter going. We got Framber going. Got the bats going this weekend, I thought, until they went 2 for 17 with runners in scoring position last night.
Yeah. And the A's, just for anybody that hasn't really checked in on the A's, like, I know most of you maniacally are always checking in on the A's. They've been a good baseball team since late June. So it's not like it's just a bunch of haphazard losers up there that you lost to last night.
They were talking on the broadcast last night, on the Astros broadcast, about how weird it's going to be for the next few years going to play at the A's.
Sacramento
minor league ballpark that they're sharing with their AAA team. So there's all sorts of scheduling oddities. But the one thing that they brought up, I think it was Callis or Blum, one of them brought it up, that I thought was interesting, was if you were a free agent, would you go play for the A's knowing that you're going to be playing in Sacramento for the next 3 years?
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah.
Does it factor into it?
To which I would say it sounds a whole lot better than playing in Oakland.
If I had to choose between playing in Oakland versus playing in Sacramento, I'd rather play in Sacramento.
I think I would.
But I wonder how much of A's fans, the disenfranchised A's fans who are just PO'd that the owner still owns the team.
Yeah.
That's the biggest thing I wonder. Even like with Raiders fans are going to follow it. They could reposition the Raiders in Guam, and people are going to find out a way to go to Guam.
Yeah.
But I don't know if the A's are the same.
No, I don't either.
They don't have the same pull.
And yet it's the same city. Like, theoretically, there should be a lot of overlap, and you're absolutely right. Like, Raider fans, like, they moved to L.A. and like, cool, we'll just go down to L.A. for all the games. They moved to Vegas. There's Raider fans from the Bay Area that invade Vegas all the time. I mean, that probably has something to do with it, that those are easy trips. Like, those are puddle jumpers from Oakland. They're dry. You know, it's not ideal to drive from the Bay Area down to L.A., but you can do it for a football game if you wanted to. I don't know what the drive from the Bay Area to Vegas is.
You know? Now, what do you mean the same city, though?
It's fans from the city. Like, the Oakland fans were very forgiving to Al Davis for moving the team multiple times. They would travel to games. These A's fans hate this owner. You know, like, they're not, they don't seem ready to.
Oh, it's the same city. Yeah, I got you. I had in my head, I was like, I think Sacramento's like 2 hours.
No. I meant the fans are from the same city.
More than 2 hours. Yeah.
The fans are from the same city, of the Raider fans and the A's fans. So that's what's interesting to me. I'm going to go next year on a road trip. I want to see what that, just out of curiosity. I myself would much rather travel to a Astros road series in a minor league ballpark in Sacramento then go to the Coliseum. And I've been to the Coliseum in Oakland for a Raiders game. Super fun. You know, not the greatest place to go for a weekend. That's all. You know, it's just. So I'm going to go next year. I'm really anxious when they get to Vegas, you know, and I'll be going to plenty of those.
Vegas, that's like the Raiders have the most expensive tickets in the in the league. And I'm guessing just part of that is that they get so many people that want to make that a destination event, and they get a lot of visiting team fans that go out there. I mean, you can go out, you can have a weekend or a week in Vegas, and also go see your team play. That's pretty cool.
It's Blue Man Group, Celine Dion, and then we go to the Raiders game on Sunday. Yes,
you remember we were talking to somebody out there who was a Raiders fan, who is saying that also, like, with hockey especially, because hockey players do not slow down on their partying tendencies.
Yeah.
That there's a little bit of a Las Vegas flu with visiting teams. The teams that travel like basketball, football, and baseball, they definitely feel that the visiting team isn't always in the best physical condition when they take the
plane. I remember this conversation you and I had, and I can't remember who
it was. A musician. From Five Finger Death Punch.
Yes, that's who told us, and I can't remember his name off the top of my head. My bad. That's who told us. You're right. Payne and Pendergast with you. So we need to plan a Sports Radio 610 road trip to Sacramento next year. Good morning, guys. This is Rolando from the North Side. Text message. My take from the game on Sunday is if the Texans would have played that exact same game against Kansas City would have won that game. So my answer is the Texans have won that game if they had played Kansas City, playing the same game they played against the Colts. So that's the meter or the standard that I'm setting for the Texans this year for every game, Kansas City. God bless, he says.
I think that's a good way to put it. Yeah. And, you know, much like I really hesitated to draw too many conclusions about the Ravens based on their game against Kansas City, because it's an unfair standard almost. The Chiefs, this is what's annoying about the Chiefs. Last year was their reset year. Like,
they won the Super Bowl.
That was their reset year. Yeah. They won a damn Super Bowl in their reset year.
Yep.
They weren't that impressive in the regular season. They had questions about their speed and depth at wide receiver. Travis Kelce looked like he was a shell of his former self. And they won a Super Bowl. And as they were doing all that, they cleared salary cap space. They loaded up in the draft in the next year. And now they're back to being – they got past their reset year, in which, by the way, they won the World Series, the Super Bowl.
We need
– whichever the relevant championship is.
Right. We need Patrick Mahomes to lose interest in football. You know, like, we just need him to get interested in something else. I've done everything I can do in this sport. So I've taken up scrapbooking. I'm going to become the GOAT when it comes to scrapbooking. Hey, you guys heard about scrapbooking? I need a new challenge.
And so, that would be awesome. He gets so good that he's bored with it, like Michael Jordan or whatever caused Michael Jordan to take his hiatus. Is he into gambling? Yeah. I'd love it if he got into gambling hardcore.
That would be awesome. Yeah. It was really frustrating. I lost my 5-team parlay. Because Brandon Ayuk dropping a touchdown pass in the back of the end zone.
Listen, I'm as sick of seeing my wife and brother on social media as you all are, so I'm going to take a break from the game. I just can't. That's just press release. I just can't with this.
Speaking of parlays, I don't know if you saw this. Nick Wright who our former colleague here, we play Nick Wright's audio on this show sometimes, played it earlier. His co-host Kevin Wilds on First Things First, I guess, was trying to kind of teach his kids a lesson about gambling and, you know, like how hard it is to hit a parlay, you know, I don't know, he was trying to scare him off. Yeah.
He was trying to make him smoke a whole pack of cigarettes to scare him off of smoking, right?
A little bit. Yeah. That's what I get. I'm only reading the tweet, so I'll read the tweet verbatim, but Nick retweeted a screen grab of a parlay that Kevin Wilds did with his kids as a family conversation starter about gambling. Yeah. So Wild says, I did this as a family conversation starter. Nick says, Wilds legit tried to teach his kids a lesson about gambling, and they ended up hitting a 14-team money line parlay that paid 2,400 to one. Unfortunately, they bet a dime. And I don't mean the slang for dimes. Dime is slang for $1,000. They bet a literal dime. 10 cents won them $239.63.
Oh, that blew up in his face, man.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
That's like when you make your kid smoke the pack of cigarettes and he's like, boy, I feel focused.
Oh, no. You know what this is?
I've never been more productive in my life.
That's making,
I just finished my term paper.
That's making the kid smoke a pack of cigarettes. And on the last one, he's literally like blowing smoke rings in your face.
Yeah, yeah. And three girls have reached out to him because he's got bad boy appeal. Dad, I've got so many DMs.
Dude, 10 cents, a 10 cent money line wager. It must have been all the Saturday and Sunday games. It was a 14 leg parlay. 10
cents. Oh my
cents,
gosh.
10
oh.
cents paid $239.
Oh, that's horrible. Those kids are hooked now.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I guess I told you I might have gotten hooked this weekend because I had locked. This is the worst part of it. It would be one thing if I had won my two Texans bets and that was all it was. But I had locked in the Texans when they were -3 back in late August. Or minus one.
Yeah.
Back in late August.
Yeah.
The line eventually moved to -3.
Yep.
But I had locked them in at -1. And then I had taken the over on the game. So I won both those bets. And the sweet, sweet elixir of me feeling like I was super smart. That I wasn't just lucky that I locked them in when they were -1.
The market, yeah.
Yeah, I'll take the pat on the back that, oh, yeah, I was smart in that instance,
hell
not just lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what gets you is when you start thinking you were smart.
Yeah, man, I knew to lock in at -1. Sharks
totally
are gonna...
forgetting that I would have locked them in at -3
yeah.
as well if I had just been a little slow on the
squares
draw.
Are yeah. going to move that thing to 3, and then the sharps yeah. are going to get in on it. Yeah,
I'm a sharp now. Is
you're
what
sharp,
I am.
Dude.
You
you're
see,
th-
I wouldn't have bet at -3, but -1 was the smart
you're
play.
You're a total sharp, Seth the sharp man. Absolutely. All right.
By the way, it was Chris Kale of Five Finger Death Punch that we were talking to, and I love Chris Kale because he's the classic. He's a hard rock / heavy metal type dude that you look at pictures of him and scary as hell. You meet him in person, you're like, oh my God, this is the most delightful person
he's
I've ever spoken
sweetheart.
To.
Sweetheart, yeah.
I'm like, this guy is, he's deep. Like, he's talking
great.
About sports with me, though, like kind of casually
he's
and everything.
Great.
Yeah.
He's great. The Texans, two key plays from the game on Sunday against the Colts that have the national media both talking and one particular member just completely flummoxed. We'll have that for you coming up next.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
I'm John Oran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. I actually have a... Quick family news item. I guess family, not technically family yet on paper, but My daughter's boyfriend, Charlie, from Survivor 46.
Runner up in season 46 of Survivor.
Yeah, yeah.
He got hosed, basically, by somebody who was supposed to be his ally for life. He got hosed, but still, yes.
So he's still living his good post-Survivor life. Yes, he did get hosed. He will be, for you Survivor fans out there, he will be co-hosting the On Fire with Jeff Probst podcast this coming season. Jeff is the host of Survivor, as many people know. He does a podcast after each episode, each season, and they take somebody from the season before to be his co-host.
I worry about these, as many people do. You know, one of the groups of people that you worry most about in this life is young attorneys recently graduated from law school.
That's Charlie, yeah. He's a lawyer. Yeah.
I worry about him taking that on while also, being a first year. I'm guessing he was a very, very good student. I'm guessing he got a job at like a high-powered firm or something.
Exactly.
And he's going to be working like 90 hours a week.
Probably.
Is he going to be able to handle both of these things?
I think he will. I don't know. I know back in the 80s, I don't know if it's as in vogue now. Don't they just start snorting a lot of cocaine to handle these multiple jobs, right? Isn't that how you get it done?
That's what you do with that big time podcast money, I guess.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's how he costs.
And then you start another
it.
Podcast about your recovery from being a coke addict.
Dude, yes. There's money in recovery, man. I'm telling you.
I bet the law firm's cool with it because having somebody you can roll out that's got a little celebrity appeal is always good.
Yeah. I mean, and
especially at your cocaine lawyer parties, I suppose.
Right. Ponytails and cocaine at our parties. That's okay.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Now I got to listen to that. I don't have any time for more podcasts. There's too many good podcasts.
There's a lot of
live radio is where it's at for me, my friend. Unless I'm listening to a replay of Sports Radio 610 podcast.
On the Odyssey app. Yeah.
Yes, on the Odyssey app.
Have I told you about the rewind feature?
It is a job. I mean, it's got one of the lowest job satisfaction rates of the lucrative professions.
Lawyering.
I think. Yeah. A lot of miserable lawyers out there.
Yeah. Yeah, my son just became one like a week ago. Sammy
is he
started
miserable
his
yet?
Job. No, I think he's good. I think he's good. He likes the people at his
I have a hard time thinking Sammy's going to be miserable in any situation.
He's one of the happiest people I know, man. Like, no, he's good.
As long as he's not imprisoned or something.
Yeah.
And even in prison, I think he'd be pretty happy. But I mean, like an actual hostage or something.
As long as you keep rattling off those Indiana rants, he'll be just fine. That's his fuel.
Yeah, he likes it when I take on Indiana.
That and General Braddock. He loves that.
The British, yeah. British
big
of
fan.
Yore. He loves when I
big fan. So the big fan of CJ Stroud, Pat McAfee. Let's replay it here. Here was CJ Stroud and Nico Collins to close out the game against the Colts.
Third down and 11 from the Houston 29-yard line. Crowd deafening. Here's the snap. CJ looking, firing right sideline, and Nico Collins with the catch. He gets the feet down for a first down at the 41-yard line.
Another bad spot, Mark. The spot is tricky. It's right at the 40.
You got to look at this.
Which is exactly where they needed to get to.
That's one of those cuts, Seth, where like I wish I could jump in a time machine real quick and go sit down next to Andre and go, don't worry, it's going to be okay. Like the spot's going to be fine.
Yeah. Don't worry about the spot. Yeah. It's the actual catch.
Spot's going to be fine. You know who?
Go ahead.
I was going to say, you know who hated that? Who hated that throw? One Patrick McAfee.
Fourth quarter, Colts get it to within two. There's like a third and seven. That is the loudest I've heard a stadium. Third and 11, I'm sorry. That is the loudest I've heard that stadium. Maybe since like Peyton Manning came back and played.
Oh, yeah.
Against Rory. Andrew Luck. Like, it was
legit.
It was so loud. In this, CJ Stroud drops back, dart, sideline. Only my guy. First down. Yeah.
So good.
First, it was like, and where we were standing, I was right behind him, like literally. So I see him look that way, and I'm like, no fucking way is this guy going to throw this ball. And then it's perfectly caught, obviously, on the sideline. This was the game. As soon as he makes that, that's game over, pretty much.
Yeah, that was...
Sorry about it, Pat.
Yeah.
Sorry about it, Pat. You know, the other thing about McAfee is I wonder if Colts fans are going to start to tire of his love for the Texans and admiration of CJ and D'Amico and everything else. Not that I'm worried for... I think he'll be all right, even if Colts fans start to get disgruntled with it. But he's pretty over the top with how much he actually wants to be a Texans fan.
Yeah, I would say they'll have to get over it because he's, it's a... it's a national show. Like, if he was way too, like, Colts biased, I think it would be a turnoff to the greater audience, you know? Like, I think
it would, yeah. No, and it, like, he doesn't really have vitriol in his bag, unless it's somebody who wrongs Aaron Rodgers. He's not really, he's, like, he genuinely stays pretty positive about stuff. So I think that if all goes according to plan, Colts fans are going to have to deal with this for the next 15 years or so.
Yes.
Or is that too pessimistic? Should I say 20 years?
I just take 15. We know how things ended with the last quarterback. 15.
Okay, all right.
You know how I get.
Well, you know what? I do think that the timeline for quarterbacks has changed a lot over the past few years. I think with Davis Mills, if I'm Davis Mills and I'm looking at why I might sign that one-year extension, I think probably, all right, aside from getting that guaranteed money up front, which is nice, there's also that, man, if I can spend 2 years in this system and really become the best quarterback I can be, I'm still going to be young by modern standards.
Great point.
And I might still have another 13 or 14 years. I think a young quarterback right now isn't being that irrational if he says, yeah, I'd like to play until I'm 40. It's just because they don't take the same physical toll. Davis Mills won't have as much actual physical battering have done to him. Of course, those first 2 years were kind of rough. So that it makes sense for him. He's got time in his career to become as good as he can in this system before he goes on to maybe make a stab at being a starter.
Well, and as an illustration, you know, you always take what you just described and look at the opposite. Can you ever imagine a running back saying, you know what, I'm just going to play another year in this system here and see how it goes so I can really max out? Running backs get angry when the franchise tag gets put on them for that exact reason. Like, no,
yeah,
I need money that pays for me and mine for a long, long time here. I need multiple years, dude, you know?
You think if Davis Mills plays next year, he'll be 26 years old. He'd have a chance. If a team wants to give him a chance to compete for the starting job or be a bridge quarterback or whatever it might be, you know, he'll be 27 years old that year with easily another 12 or 13 years to play if he stays healthy.
With 2 or 3 years of literally no punishment. You know, like,
right,
you're
no
right. Like, he had heavy, like, hella punishment the first 2 years. Last 3 years, man. Like, a few snaps against the Browns in week 16, and then that's it.
And he plays in a system that is there are a boatload of former Shanahan coaches out there.
Man.
And former Kubiak coaches.
Yep.
And, in the case, not everybody's a direct lineage to Shanahan. But they'll look at Davis Mills as a guy like, all right, okay, well, he's done some really good things. Maybe he's played in a couple of regular season games. Let's take a flyer on him.
We hit the national media on the Texans' pass game. How about the run game here? Here's Joe Mixon on 3rd and 3 to close the game.
First down lets you walk out of here with a win. 3rd down and 3 from the Houston 48 I formation. Stroud digs in. Here's the snap. Here's the toss to Mixon running right across the 50, 45. Tackled by Cross at the 41. Checkmate. That'll do it. The Texans will beat the Colts on opening day.
There you go. Legit chess being played by Vandy there. Checkmate, he dropped on him. Here's Dan Orlovsky of ESPN talking about the difference that Joe Mixon could make for the Houston Texans.
And he's really good at the outside zone as well, and I love the fact that they can, Houston, still running out of the gun, lead blockers out front. So often in the outside zone, guys will cut back too early. This time he just runs the hump and get outside. I agree with Marcus. Like, if they can run the football in their zone scheme like this, one of the best play-action passing offenses in football last year, I think it'll be almost impossible to stop this year.
Yeah, yeah. And
that made you nervous.
I don't like that. Don't heap the superlative just yet, all right? Let's not get ahead of ourselves. I quote Stephon Diggs, don't put the cart in front of the horse.
Yeah.
Yeah. He came up with that. He made that.
He made that up.
He did. Yeah, that's an original. That's probably it is probably out there on Instagram somewhere with like a quote attributing it to Stephon Diggs.
That would be beautiful.
But he did put that on Instagram or Twitter, whatever it might be. I think that the biggest thing is, look, they were already really good at the play action, but now instead of running play action on 2nd and 8. You're running play action on 2nd and 4 because you had a good rushing attempt on 1st down.
Bingo.
That's the difference. Where they were already good at the play action, but now you're doing it in better down and distance situations. That's where hopefully you become lethal. Last year, they burned And I understood it. It was unpopular when I argued in favor of it, but they burned a lot of rundowns setting up the play action. Now you're actually getting yourself in a better position while also setting up the play action.
Yep, absolutely. Let's see. We didn't update everybody on the Barbara Bush Houston Literacy Foundation final numbers. Text message. Thank you, 6156. Great show, boys. How much did we raise for books for the kids? Keep up the awesome work. $85,000 yesterday.
What was the goal?
When we used to do it for the whole week, the goal would be $100,000. The goal for the one
that
day.
That was the whole week.
That was the whole week. The goal, I think, for yesterday on the graphics I saw was $70,000.
Nice.
And we raised $85,000.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Stepped
and
up
also,
huge.
Eric got a lot of go suck an egg. A lot of we told people to put Eric go suck an egg or whatever you might want to, however you want to phrase
graphic
it.
You want to be. Yeah.
He got a lot of those yesterday.
Yeah, Eric
and he was none too happy to get it.
Yep. Eric is one of the DJs on the morning bullpen, and we like him, except when we remember that he's a Cowboys fan.
Mm-hmm.
And you said you felt a little remorse because he's helped you with some social media.
He helps
media
Mo and I out a lot with some of our Bayway stuff.
Yeah.
Mo and I are both technical dullards. Her more so than me.
Yeah,
but
you're pretty
still.
Good, I think, man.
Yeah, but she's got other advantages. So it's, he helps us out a lot.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. But I'm glad that he had to go suck it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
An egg.
Yeah, an egg. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, pronouns, pal. Yes, absolutely. $85,000. Thank you for bringing that up. Even more so, thank you to all the listeners. Anybody who contributed to that, we really, really appreciate it. All right, final segment coming up. D'Amico Ryan's on his coach's show talked about something that he did. Maybe we've heard of him doing this before. Maybe other coaches do this. I just thought it was really cool. And we start to get ready as well for the Bears. How are you getting ready for Caleb Williams? We'll hear from the Texans head coach. Final segment coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Oh, yeah. That was my question to Nick last night on the plane. Like, hey, Colin Scouts, they're ready to go. And Caleb, right? So, yeah, he was like, yep, they're ready to go. Yep. They'll have a report on him for college. So it's pretty cool, man. That's how the building works. Like, all the work that our scouts put in as they're scouting college players, like, how important is that now? Because I don't have much of a background of Caleb and what he's done in college, but to be able to rely on our scouting department and their expertise in that area, and that's going to help us prepare for week two.
If I wanted to be dirty, if I wanted to be like one of these aggregator accounts or something on Twitter, I could take D'Amico's tone of voice when he said Caleb there and interpret it as Caleb. Like you kind of said, Caleb.
Disdain.
I don't know anything about what. Oh, yeah. What? You think I studied Caleb? Now, he definitely, there was no reason for him to study Caleb heading into the draft or anything. I feel like the Texans feel pretty good. Feel pretty good about their own quarterback.
Yeah.
And would have been tough to trade up to number one overall to draft Caleb Williams. So D'Amico didn't spend a lot of time on Caleb Williams in the offseason. I will say that I think the scouting report, the negatives in the scouting report after week one showed up in that game.
Yeah.
And that's not me saying, oh, Caleb Williams is a bust or anything, but some of the bad footwork, some of the questionable decision-making at times, all of those things that showed up, but the highlights of his scouting report didn't really show up. His ability to make some of the really incredible throws, every time he attempted, he made one pass attempt where he was running out of bounds while taking a hit and throwing across his body. That was a really bad decision. And he got lucky on. You make that decision, I think, like 7 times out of 10, it's an interception, possibly a pick six. So, but then he airmailed some pretty easy big plays. So that it wasn't a great performance for him. He wasn't helped out by his offensive line. Frankly, I don't think he was helped out by his offensive coordinator. They put him under center 10 times, and it was a really bad effort, both as a passer and a rushing attack. So the Bears didn't do much good offensively at all. And it wasn't all because of Caleb Williams, but it didn't look good.
Yeah. That used to be a big talking point with Romeo Crennel when he was a DC. His record against rookie starters.
Yeah.
Like Romeo Crennel just completely flummoxed rookie stuff. Now we should point out that rookie starters are predisposed already probably to be bad against most everybody in their rookie year, you know. Yeah. So, but Romeo Crennel had a remarkable record against rookie starters. D'Amico Ryans, I don't know how he was in San Francisco as a DC. I'm guessing really good because the two seasons he was the DC, they lost very few games. Last year, Anthony Richardson kind of got him in week one. Carolina, Bryce Young. Bryce wasn't the reason they won that game. And then the two Will Levis games. Will Levis was trash in both of those games. Caleb Williams, I think, is just physically more gifted than any of those guys that they were playing last year. So it's, you know, I mean, it's a little like the Anthony Richardson thing. Like, I think, you know, when it comes to, like, downs where Caleb Williams is under center and he's having to do conventional things, I feel really good. He's not going to look the same as Anthony Richardson doing it, but it is probably the off-script stuff that if he's able to hit a couple of those, either with his legs or with his arm downfield. Like Caleb throws the ball downfield and he knows where that thing's going. You know, like Anthony Richardson was just heaving it downfield.
He didn't, and in week one, he did look like he was just heaving it at times. And then you saw some of the things where, and again, that's where I'm more likely to just chalk that up to him being a rookie and him being a guy that, you know, even though he claims that he never gets nervous and all that, which got really annoying. He looked like he was kind of nervous either or amped up. He was overthrowing more so than underthrowing. So maybe there was a little bit of that. Now, coming into an NRG environment where I think the fans are going to be as loud as they've ever been, they'll probably be louder than they were in the playoff game last year. Mm-hmm. I think that's not an easy environment for a young quarterback to go into. And he also did the offensive line, just they got physically manhandled at times. The Chicago Bears offensive line did. So it's not a great environment for Caleb Williams, but I'm not going to sit here and act like he can't improve a lot over week one. I think he's still very capable of, as we saw last week, versus a Texans defense that still has this issue of giving up big plays. That's a rough problem to have versus a young quarterback like Caleb Williams.
Absolutely. Yep, for sure. D'Amico, and one last thing on the game on Sunday, like, be there early. Get there early. I want this thing to look good on TV. You know what I mean? Like, we don't get many. We're going to have a ton of them this year, national games. But this is the first, like, truly primetime Sunday night or Monday night football game that NRG Stadium has had, I think, since 2019. I think that Patriots game where the entire Patriots team got COVID 5 months before COVID became a thing, you know, back in late 2019. They all had the flu. The Pats.
Oh, that's right. The flu game. That was their flu game.
Yeah, that was, I think, week 13 or 12 of that 2019 season. That's the last time that the Texans have had a Sunday night or Monday night football game at all, I think, let alone at home. So, yeah, be loud. And we're
white. It being a Sunday night game makes it easier, too, because it's not people aren't getting off of work and then rushing to the stadium or what have you. So I would expect it's going to be pretty full very early. I
expect there's going to be a lot of sauced up Texan fans in that stadium, man. Tailgating all afternoon. That's fun. This was pretty cool, I thought. This is at the end of D'Amico Ryan's sit down with John Harris and Mark Vandermeer earlier this week. Coffee with the coach, I think, is what they call it now. I don't know if a lot of teams do this. If this is maybe a Shanahan thing or a Kubiak thing that D'Amico has adapted or kind of taken from them, or if this is unique. I just thought it was really cool. Here's D'Amico Ryans on trying to help his coaches balance family and all the time that goes into coaching.
And that's an awesome question. First off, from like a day like tomorrow on Tuesday, it's our game plan day. Coaches are here pretty late on Tuesday game planning. So what we did starting last year, and thankful to Cal and Hannah for providing this for us, but we were able to have family dinner here at the facility with our family. So the wife and kids can come over and have dinner with their husbands. And you get, you know, a couple hour and a half or two just to see the kids. You can run around for a little bit knowing it's going to be a late night. That shows that family is important. And I try to make sure guys understand it.
And Friday's the big day, right? Friday, when you get off a little tiny bit early and get some Friday night time with the family.
No doubt. And Friday is that's the day I tell guys, I kick them out. I say, go pick your kids up from school.
Yeah.
Like, we're out pretty much after practice. We're done, you know, as a staff. Go pick your kids up from school and, you know, spend time with them. And then you have that evening to have a date night with your wife.
There you go. D'Amico making family, bringing families together.
What percentage of coaches are like, yeah, great, I get to have a date night with my wife. Well, I didn't go into this profession so I could spend time with my family, D'Amico.
I was thinking the same thing. I said, it's really cool that he does that because you know there are coaches that really like that he's doing that. Probably. Plenty of them.
Yeah, the majority of them.
Yeah, the majority of them.
Especially the kind of guys he hires.
And for sure. Yeah, like there's an overlap there. But it's a big staff. You know there's at least two or three guys that are like, there's a reason I'm working 18 hours a day, all right?
So back in the old day, coaches have always spent a lot of time at the office. They still, NFL coaches under D'Amico are still working way more hours per week than the average American. But in the old days, there was a lot of wasted time, and part of it was just because you had to wait around for the film to be edited.
Yeah.
And I think once they digitized everything, which wasn't as recent as it should have been, but it was like around 2005, 2006, teams went to digital, and you didn't have to wait around for people to physically, manually edit the Betamax tapes.
Yeah.
I think teams started to realize, all right, we can get the same amount of work done more efficiently, and they started paying attention to sleep studies and all of those things where it's better if we get in and we're efficient and we work really hard, but then give people a little bit of time to relax. That's where the challenge now, I think, for a lot of coaches is, all right, how can we be as efficient as possible while still giving them enough time to sleep and spend a little bit of time away from the facility so they're fresh? And where it pays dividends, I think, honestly, is in some of the coaching management decisions. You just, as a player, remember, Sean, you read that article about sleep.
Yeah, Sean McVay was the focal point of that article. And it's that Cornell doctor was quoted in there. Yeah.
They cited a professor who was one of the original sleep researchers. I took a class from him my freshman year in college, or my sophomore year in college, and it changed my life because I learned all this stuff that they're saying, oh, they just discovered this. Like, no, they knew this back in the 90s. It's that hard-headed football coaches didn't want to believe it until the late teens of the 2000s. There used to be so many game management errors where I'd be like, yeah, they're sleep deprived. Like, these guys, you're out at practice and your coach is screaming because he tells everybody to go left when he meant to say everybody go right. And it's just like this classic sleep deprivation types of mistakes. They're moody and ornery when they don't need to be. And they're making simple errors that were just because they'd been up until 3 a.m. thinking what they crafting what they thought was the perfect game plan. It was just stupid. For decades, it was like that.
Did you see a big difference in your level of play? I know it was in college, not in the NFL. Did you see a big difference in your level of play once you figured all that out with sleep?
No, it's hard to say because I was like that from the onset.
Yeah.
I was just always, I'd just kind of duck out and do the old Irish goodbye.
Yeah.
And if I was out with the fellas, I'd be, hey, where'd Seth go?
Yeah. You're really good at that, by the way. You're the best.
I've got no. Look, when you get to the point when it's time to duck out, most people are too drunk to notice that you're ducking out. So you just leave.
Yeah.
I couldn't really notice the difference. I just knew that it made sense. I've seen enough in my normal life, you know, to know when you're just not as sharp, motivationally especially.
Oh, for sure.
Your motivation is so... Tom Coughlin used to say, fatigue makes cowards of us all, which is an old quote from somebody else, but that was a big one there. It turns you into a wimp.
Text message. Matt Burke had been telling his wife he had to work late on Fridays. Cat just out of the bag. Whoops. LOL. That's a text. That's not true. As far as we know, but Matt Burke seems like he would be a guy who would enjoy a good Friday date night, actually.
Did I ever tell you the story about a player, a notable player that I used to hang out with when I was a rookie, that when he told his wife once, this is pre-internet, told his wife once, I'm going out because it's Seth's birthday, so I got to go out with Seth, it's his birthday. He leaves, his wife pulls out the program from a previous week, sees that, oh, Seth's birthday is in February, and we're in week 3 of the NFL season. And I don't know what he said, but I don't know what he told his wife, but she hated me somehow.
Yeah,
instead of him. Yeah, like he somehow turned it on me after
Seth
that.
Seth has the wrong birthday.
Yeah. He lied to me. He lied, I swear.
Reggie Atatula, John Lopez, they are in the loop, and they are here. How many hours of sleep do you get a night, Reggie?
That's a great question because I'm finding a new sleep schedule myself right
you
now.
You used to be on nights when you were on up in Dallas.
Nights, and then also I would produce middays.
Oh,
so
wow.
Like the schedule fluctuated in some ways, and I'm very much, I'm not in bed until midnight. But now I'm waking up a little bit earlier because I want to make sure that the show is all put together.
For
so
sure.
Anywhere from like, you know, 5 or 6 to maybe like 7.5
Okay, that's good. As long as it's good sleep.
No, that's not good. Huh? That's you got to work on that. On average, you're getting 5.5 to 6 hours a night?
No, there's a few nights here and there where it'll go like 5.5 More often, it's anywhere from like 6.5 to 7.5
Okay, okay.
Yeah. As long as it's good sleep. As long as you're not snoring or whatever. You know what I mean? Like if
pretty good sleep.
Okay.
But yeah, I am working on it, Seth. I appreciate your concern.
Consecutive or total?
Well, you're older. You got to get up and go to the bathroom in the middle of the night.
That's why I said consecutive or total. Your day is coming. Total. Don't look at me like that.
Not yet. Not anytime soon.
What is your situation, John? Sleep?
Well, married.
No.
Did you think he was propositioning you or something?
I don't need that part of your bedroom story. No, what is your sleep situation?
I very rarely, I'm not proud of this, but I am what I am. I'm not going to hide that I'm getting up there in years. Yeah. I very rarely sleep more than 2 hours consecutively.
That's not good, John.
But I get
But
I get about 7 I that's bathroom, come back. I shouldn't say occasionally 3 If I check the clock when I come back from the bathroom, I said, "Hey, I was asleep for 3 hours." That's a win.
Okay, and you go back.
Yeah, but you're in bed for 7 hours.
I sleep about 7, 7.5
Yeah, but when
that's
good.
I
mean, get up that many times in the middle of the night, man.
You can't tell me you don't experience this.
Interrupted once.
It's coming.
I'm back to 0 or 1
Really?
Yes. Yeah.
I'm a good solid 2 or 3
Yeah, no, I'm not there. Now if I go out the night, you know, like on a I'm out till 2 a.m. and I've been drinking all night, it's a bad night of sleep regardless. But
you know what the big thing I've noticed? This we turn this into old man sports radio. I don't even eat fruit at dinner anymore. Like I get as hydrated as I can by 2 p.m. and then that's it for me. I'm sweating or something in the evening, I just like no more liquids after that, and then I can sleep through the night.
That is planning. I can't do that. That's too much stuff. I'll get up and go to the bathroom.
Yeah, sorry, you're gonna have to curb your heavy fruit intake.
I eat a lot of fruit. Oh, you can go to hell. I eat a lot of fruit. Hey, I'm gonna send you a picture of my breakfast at Avalon Diner. I replace the hash browns with fruit every single time.
Every time,
the jackass.
You're mowing down fruit at dinner?
No, I mow down fruit during the day, like during the afternoon.
That's what I'm saying. Just don't eat fruit at night because it's got a lot of water.
Well, you said after 2 o'clock.
Yeah,
no, I eat fruit.
Okay, you can keep your 3 p.m. fruit snack.
I eat fruit in the afternoon. Yeah.
What a weird thing to get defensive over. I do eat fruit.
Well, he's implying that I'm a fat person is what he's doing
that
right now.
That is true. He is doing that.
Yeah. Not the fruit thing. It's the implication of it, Reggie. You do 4 hours with him.
You're drinking fruit of the rye is what you're doing in the afternoons.
That's fair. I mean, that's not just...
God bless you 4 hours.
There is a lime in most of my drinks.
Hops is not a fruit, Sean.
Lime is fruit. A tiny wedge of lime. Yes. All right, we're done. We're out of time. Seth, antibodies to you, my friend.
Antibodies and all the booze and fruit for you.
Fruit, please. Yes, I'm going today. 3 oranges and a pomegranate.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
I'm John Oran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.